Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Subscribers, thank you. We appreciate you greatly. Thank you for the notes and cards and things that you send as well. That's such a blessing, emails and everything. Those that are fasting on Tuesdays or Fridays, I've forgotten to mention this for quite a while now, but I'm still fasting on Tuesdays. Once I got used to that with the elections, I just stayed on that day from Fridays, which I'd been doing for many, many years because it worked better in my schedule. But anyone that is fasting on Tuesdays or Fridays, thank you for doing that. I think God loves when we do that. It's a great blessing to ourselves and things we're praying about and our relationship with the Lord. And I appreciate that. Those watching on Rumble, please like, share, and follow. That helps us a lot. Today is going to be kind of another powwow like we've had before in the past that covers many different key topics from China, the woke agenda, judicial activism, 9/11 evidence, and the collapse of Colorado and other things as well. There were so many different things going on, it's hard to stick with just a theme or a specific topic. So that's what it's going to be like today, but I really appreciate you joining me. I wanted to remind you as I get started today to go back and watch earlier episodes, kind of flip through on your dashboard different topics. Many of those from 3 or 4 years ago are still beneficial to watch today. They have clear wisdom and understanding on different topics and advice and counsel. And I just want to make sure that you're taking advantage of that. Don't just watch just the most recent one, but go back. And there's a lot of different episodes on a lot of different topics. And we try to make them as timeless as possible. Some of the episodes are just on what's going on today, but most of them are not. We try to dig in deeper. I also wanted to mention this, just a key principle of life is don't read too much into things in life. I feel like sometimes our side, because we really want to know the truth, which is good, and we're trying to figure things out, we're too picky on every little, the way that guy said that or whatever. Just take the good and leave the stuff you're not sure about or the bad, because it'll be a rare occasion during your entire life that you meet someone, including me, that you agree with exactly on every single thing. I don't think I've ever met anyone like that, that I agree with on every single thing. And that's okay. If I'm sometimes driving along, listening to a pastor on the radio, maybe a different perspective or some things I don't agree with, I don't let that bother me. I just take the good things that he said that I'm like, hey, that's a good point I haven't thought about, and take that into my little treasure chest of nuggets of truth. And so please do that with me, but with everyone you listen to. And don't dig in so deep that you always think there's an ulterior motive or whatever. I never have that. I don't think I could function or communicate at all if I was really trying to say something different than what I'm trying to communicate. And so sometimes some of you think I'm hinting at things where I'll never hint. I will always say crystal clear, this is what I think and why. And you can take that or you can leave that. And if we do disagree on something, I hope you won't throw the baby out with the bathwater and go, oh, well, he has a different opinion on whatever, and so I'm not going to listen to him anymore. Again, if you do that, you cut yourself off from 95% of all the wisdom in the world that will be presented by people that you don't agree with every single thing they've ever said or done or written or, you know, and things like that. So I just want to encourage you in that. I learned that when I was young from somebody, and it's been such a blessing to me, where I can listen and understand maybe some liberal professor's talking and I know most of what he's saying is nonsense, but then he had a good point on something. Oh, I'm taking that. So it's just, it opens you up to be able to gather the nuggets everywhere instead of just a few specific narrow places. I was reading this week in my Bible, one of the footnotes was from Charles Spurgeon talking about science. And I just wanted to read you a quote. This is Charles Spurgeon, the Prince of Preachers from the 1880s. And listen to what he said about science even then. It's so insightful. You know how they use science against us now. Trust the science. We are the science. There's no arguing with the science and all that stuff. But listen to what he said, 130 years ago. What is science? The method by which men try to hide their ignorance. That is so funny if you think about that. It's the method by which men try to hide their ignorance. We are so ignorant of everything in God's creation. We don't know 1/1% about anything. There's not one topic we know 1/1% about. And yet, 6 feet social distancing, wear the mask, trust the science, climate change, global warming, global cooling, all the foolishness. And then he goes on to talk about it. It's so funny even then. But here's what he said then to close his quote on this. You may tell where the supposed learned have encamped by the debris left behind of suppositions and theories as plentiful as broken bottles. You know, all the, well, we believe this, oh, now it's changed, now it's changed. Yeah, their science is not exact at all, never has been, and never will be. And so, anyway, but it's amazing that 140 years ago almost, a godly man could see that even then. Oh, this is all, man's trying to act like he's a lot wiser and smarter and more clever than he actually is. And so anyway, I love that. The globalists we see still all over are still marching with no support to their global government. We see, you know, in France, Marine Le Pen, you know, is, oh no, you're a criminal, now you can't run and everything, kicking the most popular person that loves their country off the ballot. In Romania, we saw the same thing a few months ago. In Germany, now in Brazil, they're trying to arrest Bolsonaro because all the polls show he's winning by 15-20% against Lula in the next election. So they said, nope, we're charging him with crimes, so he will be not able to run. This is going on everywhere. It's sobering when it's so obvious, but they just keep doing it anyway. We need to keep educating people to what's going on. In Colorado, I used to live in Colorado for many years, and it used to be such a wonderful conservative state, and now it's one of the most radical that there is. But they had a bill that passed the House, and now it's heading to the Senate. But if parents don't go along with the transgender nonsense, the children will be taken by the state permanently, and the state will pay for the surgeries to mutilate. And yes, even down to the age of 5, a brainwashed 5-year-old will be taken and given surgery, if that's what they want from the brainwashing they received. Unbelievable. And then, if that wasn't enough for Colorado, the demonic forces, I believe, are absolutely in control of Colorado in every way. It's so evil. But watch this clip here. This is from their legislature debating another bill that's going forward now. It says, we need to fund more abortions to save the state money in paying for live births, because to have a live birth is more expensive than abortion. And so this is how we're going to save money and have way more money to spend on other things. Watch this clip.
That savings comes from the averted births that will not occur because abortions happened instead. So a birth is more expensive than an abortion. So the savings comes in Medicaid births that will not occur. This bill will actually decrease costs for our healthcare policy and financing department, our Medicaid expenditures in both this year and out years, as the savings from averted births outweigh the cost of covering reproductive health care for all Coloradans. This bill requires all abortion services to be state-funded. The bill requires an increase to general fund of $1.5 million to cover the cost for care. But again, a reminder that ultimately the state will see a cost savings. And ultimately, it is truly an honor to be here carrying this bill alongside Rep. Garcia, and I ask for your support of Senate Bill 183.
When she said, I hope you'll actually support this bill, that's in America. It's hard to comprehend. Let me tell you what's next, because it's already going on in Canada and most of the countries of Europe. It's eliminating the sick, because that saves tax dollars also. And it's the next step on the road we're heading. Canada's already doing it. Or if you're depressed or whatever, just take the euthanasia pill and you're done. And we're done. We don't have to, you know, pay for anything for you ever again. You're going to see that really escalating. Another thing that came out this week, when the Supreme Court agreed that Trump has the authority to remove terrorists and drug lords and gang members from our country that illegally got into our country. I don't know if you noticed or not, but Amy Coney Barrett voted against that. She said, no, Trump should not have the power to remove gang leaders and members and terrorists from our country. And I just, I don't know, it's so horrible. She's just like Roberts. They're enemies of our country. It shows her true colors. The people that were around Trump in his first term were not good people. They were the globalists, the establishment people. And so most of his picks were not very good. And I hope this term, as he gets to appoint a few more, we get incredibly good ones like Clarence Thomas. But what a disaster. Another issue on a different note. I love when other nuggets come forth to help us better understand things like September 11th. Here's a clip from a CIA whistleblower that's talking about info that was never released to the public, to us, but that she knew about. It makes September 11th even more understandable of how our government did that and the ways they got in there to do that.
Video cameras caught trucks arriving at the World Trade Center from about August 23rd until every night until about September 2nd, September 3rd. And the trucks were arriving at about 3 o'clock in the morning when everybody else had left the building, including the janitorial trucks. And the trucks were leaving at 5 a.m. right before the AAA personalities of Wall Street got to work to start their day. Something was brought into that building that would help with the detonation. There may have been work done on the detonation before. It may have been going on for months, but whatever they needed at the very end, they came and brought in that 10-day period. And in August of 2001, I was told to stay out of New York City because the attack was considered imminent. We expected mass casualties and a possible miniature thermonuclear strike, bomb. However, I want to be very clear. The attack was always defined as airplane hijackings and a strike on the World Trade Center.
So the surveillance footage showed lots of big trucks pulling in every night, weeks before September 11th, with crews going into the building to do something. Yeah, I wonder what that was. Anyway, crazy. China, as you know, is trying to dominate the world. They started down that path in 1949, but there's some huge problems that are coming up. And the war in China that's going on is against itself. And it's interesting to me, though, Mao, the great communist leader that came in there, was blinded to the fact that when he instituted a one-child policy, he was guaranteeing the destruction of his communist utopia in the future. And so rejecting children now, the consequences are they're dying off and they're realizing we're in trouble because we're getting so many elderly, which I'm sure they'll just kill them off, but we don't have enough workers for our factories and things. And so they're really having trouble and starting to collapse, which is wonderful. And we need to pray that the collapse will cause the people to rise up and throw off the chains of communism and be free. And that would be wonderful. But a communist state also has consequences to it. Because it's so corrupt and its ways don't work, so it guarantees you're going to be economically struggling forever because it's so inefficient, it so stifles creativity and motivation and everything. But watch this clip here, a 3-minute clip from a guy talking about the current state of affairs in China. It's pretty sobering because of some of those things I just mentioned.
You're saying that China has 10 years to go.
At most.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we now know that they've lied about their population statistics, and they overcounted their population by over 100 million people, all of whom would have been born since the one-child policy was adopted. So this is one of those places where they've got more people in their 60s and their 50s and their 40s and their 30s and their 20s.
Now, what was the logic behind the one-child? Was it that they were overpopulating?
Mao was concerned that as the country was modernizing, the birth rate wasn't dropping fast enough and that the young generation was literally going to eat the country alive. So they went through a breakneck urbanization program, which destroyed the birth rate. At the same time, they penalized anyone who wanted to have kids. And both of those at the same time have generated the demographic collapse we're in now.
And the problem with that also was that they wanted male children.
Yeah, there's a cultural aspect to that too. And obviously, men can't have kids on their own.
And what is the, like, ratio to men to women in the younger people in China now?
Before the data revision, with the last set of lies, it was about 1 to 1.2. It was the most distorted in the world, even more than Sri Lanka, where there had been a civil war for 30 years. Since then, we don't have good sex-by-sex data, but it's undoubtedly worse.
And so what are the other problems that they're encountering that leads you to believe that they only have 10 years left?
Well, without young people, we've seen their labor costs increase by a factor of 14 since the year 2000. So Mexican labor is now one-third the cost of Chinese labor. Their educational system focuses on memorization over skills. So despite $1 trillion of investment and a bottomless supply of intellectual property theft, they really haven't advanced technologically in the last 15 years. Mexican labor is probably about twice as skilled as Chinese labor now, even though it's one-third the cost. They've consolidated into an ethnic-based, paranoid, nationalistic cult of personality, and it's very difficult for the Xi administration to even run it because it's not an administration anymore. No one wants to bring Xi information on anything. So we now have tech barricades that prevent the Chinese from buying the equipment, the tools, or the software that's necessary to make semiconductors. In fact, he went so far as to say any Americans working in the sector have to either quit or give up their American citizenship. Every single one of them either quit or was transferred abroad within 24 hours. So the tech system is stalled. They don't have the young people to go consumption-led. They're completely dependent on the U.S. Navy to access international trade. They are the most vulnerable country in the world right now. And based on how things go with Russia, we're looking at a significant amount of raw materials falling off the map, specifically food and energy. And the Chinese are the world's largest importer of both of those things. So there's no version of this where China comes through looking good. And the challenge for the rest of us is to figure out how do we, in as smooth and quick as a process as possible, figure out how we can get along without them. Because they are going away. And they're going away this decade for certain.
I don't know if he was right in saying they'll be gone in 10 years for sure. But they're going to have major problems in 10 years for sure. And that's why they're working so adamantly on AI and supercomputers and things like that, because they need the robotics to replace the people that are dying off so they can keep the industry going to keep propping up this communist state. But the tensions there, you know, will communism collapse? It'd be wonderful if it did. But they see all this happening too. All the things that man just said, they understand. And so maybe world war is a solution for them or whatever it might be. But war with China is still very possible because, again, a communist is so delusional that if they think that's their only option, let's go for it. Our odds of beating America are slim, but let's just go for it because we're going to be out of power anyway if that doesn't happen. So anyway, it's just a dangerous place to be. But I'm thankful Trump is in there that doesn't love war, and he's good at negotiating things. And I pray that God will have his hand on that whole situation. And if China is to collapse, then it will collapse into a free society where Christianity and biblical principles can be spoken freely in the streets and spread, and that the Christians there will have seen the fruit of their prayers and their efforts to evangelize China bear some good fruit. Along those same lines, if you look at Mao's Cultural Revolution back in the 60s and 70s, it is the perfect blueprint for what's happening today in America. Here's a clip that kind of explains that I saw, and it's perfect. This is exactly what the communists are doing right now with the woke trans agenda in America. It's the exact strategy, just a different mechanism that Mao used. But watch this.
Well, it's evil, and it's just what we've seen in America. But Mao realized one of the greatest forces in human nature is the force of a 20-year-old who's trying to be socially acceptable. And so they define these four or five types of bad, five bads, if you're a capitalist, if you're a landlord, if you're anti-revolution, blah, blah. And if you're one of the bads, you get tortured or beaten or rusticated, or you're made to fly the jet for 3 days, sit with your knee with your arms out, all this stuff, publicly humiliated. And your bad goes to your children. And the only way for your children to get out from under that bad is if they become red. And that's exactly what's happened to us with, you know, the bads are being cis, being male, being white. And the only way out of all that is to be woke, some flavor of woke. And that, which was honed by Mao in the Cultural Revolution, 66 to 76, is like paint-by-the-numbers approach. Who's ever behind this in the U.S. has been following that exact approach. And that's why all of our... It's a cultural war where they have defined these bad categories. And if you're a kid, if you're a 20-year-old, you're made to feel so guilty with a bunch of fake history or half-true history that the only way you can expunge your guilt is to become woke.
They know if you capture the minds and hearts of the, you know, high school, college age students, they're so wanting to go along and get along and be accepted that if you create the conditions where they feel like they're not going to be accepted unless they accept the crazy nonsense, which is what they've successfully done, then you have total control of them and they'll do anything. Just like in China, they would turn in their own parents to be executed and they thought, oh, this is wonderful what I've done. That's how brainwashed they were. But the same thing is going on in America with these trans radical woke activists, you know, burning down Tesla dealers, calling openly for the assassination of Trump. That would be a good thing. That's the right thing to do. And stuff. You just see, man, that propaganda is so powerful and so controlling of people. Bezmenov, who was a KGB agent that defected to our country long ago, and I've put up his videos before, but here's a clip put together by someone just explaining one little short part of his explaining to the American people back in the 80s. Here's what they're doing to you. But every year I watch it as we go further down that road of exactly what he said would happen. But this clip explains why they have done what they did to get us in the position we are.
Our conversation is with Mr. Yuri Alexandrovich Bezmenov. He was the son of a high-ranking Soviet Army officer. He had an outstanding career with the press agency of the Soviet Union. It turns out that this is also a front for the KGB. He escaped to the West in 1970 after becoming totally disgusted with the Soviet system, and he did this at great risk to his life. He certainly is one of the world's outstanding experts on the subject of Soviet propaganda and disinformation and active measures. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean?
Ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him.
Do you believe then that men can become pregnant and have abortions?
Yes. What has this world come to? It's come to a world where drag kids actually exist.
And people do ketamine on a couch.
The next stage is destabilization. Economy.
There are some dire predictions on where the world economy is going.
Foreign relations.
Some of the world's superpowers could be on a collision course.
Defense systems.
The U.S. Army is cutting back its expectations due to, quote, unprecedented recruitment challenges.
The next stage, of course, is crisis.
Folks,
We're in a crisis.
After crisis, you have so-called the period of normalization.
When we say getting back to normal, we mean something very different from what we're going through right now.
The demoralization process is basically completed already. I could never believe it when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. This is exactly what the KGB and Marxist-Leninist propaganda wants from Americans, to distract their opinion and attention from real issues of the United States, to have a bunch of duped Americans, then Americans who are healthy, physically fit, and alert to the reality.
What is your ideal political or social structure?
Communist utopia.
That's why my KGB instructors specifically made the point, try to get into filthy rich movie makers, intellectuals, cynical, egocentric people who can look into your eyes with angelic expression and tell you a lie. These are the people who KGB wanted very much to recruit. All these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders, they are instrumental in the process of subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. The psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will join the links of dissenters. Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. The United States is in the state of war. The initiator of this war is the world communist system.
The only solution is communist revolution.
That's why we need communists. That's what we need.
This is it. This is the last country of freedom and possibility.
That was filmed in the 1980s, 40 years ago. But it's so true, the point he made. I made this point in the agenda films, but it's a key one. All participants in the revolution will be executed by the communist when the revolution is done. They despise the people that betray their own country. But this is what we've been living through our entire lives, what he just talked about, the entire thing. And then I heard another video this week that was excellent, talking about The Agenda by Victor Davis Hanson. And 15 years ago when I made Agenda, that was one of my key points and motivations in making it. I wanted people to understand it was an agenda. America wasn't collapsing because that's just the way things go or things are just falling apart, but it's a specific agenda by those that seek to destroy, which is a key thing for people to understand. So then they're engaging the battle. They realize it's a war going on for our country. It's not just collapsing because that's just what happens after so long, nothing you can do. But anyway, watch this clip because he is just analyzing the last 4 years and talking about what agenda you would have if you were trying to destroy America and comparing that to the agenda we did have the last 4 years.
I was looking at the news this week and I thought of an experiment. What if you really wanted to destroy the United States? What if you'd had ill intention for America? What would you do? What agenda would you pursue? And then I started thinking of civilizations. What was the stuff of civilizations that make them work? It's basic. Their borders, their finances, their unity, their fuel, their food. So if you really wanted to, in civilizational terms, destroy the United States, the first thing I would do if I was an enemy of the United States was I would destroy the borders. In other words, I would just let anybody come across our version of the Rhine or the Danube, as they happened in the 5th century. And that's pretty much what we have done the last 40 years, but particularly the last 4 years. We talked about comprehensive immigration reform as needed to stop the influx, but Donald Trump, before the Biden administration and after the Biden administration, had no such recourse. He just simply stopped it temporarily, and he has now. But what was behind all that? Joe Biden apparently thought that if he let in 12 million people without audits or background checks, Would it alter the demography? Would it give him new constituencies for big government? What was the thinking about it? But it's caused billions of dollars in increased expenses. It's really damaged the inner city. It's damaged the Rio Grande Valley. It's damaged the San Joaquin Valley. We have all of this crime spike. Was it deliberate? If you also wanted to hurt the United States, you know what I would do if I had nefarious intent? I would keep printing money, and I would call it with, I would call that a fact, build back better. And the more inflationary it got, I would say it was going to be, the Inflationary Reduction Act. And in that process, I would borrow maybe $7 trillion within 4 years, maybe eight, and add to an existing $30 trillion in national debt, 37, so that the interest per day would be $3 billion. That would really hurt the United States. You know what I'd also do? If I looked at the United States and I said, oh my gosh, they've got almost limitless supplies of natural gas. They've got almost more coal than any European country. They've got all of this oil. They once had a vibrant, they were the nuclear energy. They were the founders of nuclear power. They have all these dams with hydroelectric. I know what I'll do. I will castigate all of that and say it makes either the environment too hot, global warming, or it ruins the natural landscape with dams, or it will kill us all through radiation. Whatever particular complaint I'd have, I would stop it as much as I could. Dismantle nuclear power plants. Cut back on natural gas. Stop full drilling, fracking. Blow up dams rather than build them. And I'm talking about California, for example, where the result would be 40 cents a kilowatt. It would make it unaffordable. That way, if you did all of that, a quarter of all the people who paid their power bills would default. And that model would sweep across the United States. The third thing that I would do, and I think it's besides debt and borders and fuel, I would kind of sow disunity. And I would say that the content of our character is not as important as the color of our skin. And I would go back and reinterpret all of the hard-won progress of the civil rights movement and sort of get rid of it. I would just say the color of our skin matters more than anything. And so we're going to hire on the basis of superficial appearance. We're going to have reparations to go back eight generations and adjudicate who might have had an ancestor that owned a slave and who didn't. And then I would say I'm going to predicate graduations, dorms, who gets to go into a dorm, who gets to go into a library, a safe space, on the basis of race. But I'm not going to call it racism or segregation. I'm going to call it diversity, equity, and inclusion, and mainstream it. If I also wanted to create disunity, I would just say from now on, after 7,000 years of civilization, there are three sexes, not two. And women's sports must include biological males. Not that it was an important topic, but it would create enormous tension and disunity. What am I getting at? It seems to me that in the last 4 years, if you had an agenda that was designed to hurt the United States in terms of an influx of 12 million foreigners that were unaudited, an unprotected border, a repression on energy, a desire to print money rather than to cut expenses and save money and go toward a balanced budget, and a way to divide the people, if you wanted to do all that, you couldn't have done a better job than what we have seen from 2021 to 2025.
And that's the revelation that so many have awakened to, which is such a blessing. They realize, no, the Democrats were trying to take down America. That's their only agenda. They're not about trying to really help people, but they're just misguided in their ideas about how to do that. It's all about destruction, because when you collapse the economy, you collapse the people, you turn them into slaves, and you're in total control of them. Another key issue we saw this week was the destruction of the judicial system by the radicals. Here's a clip of Senator Kennedy exposing the lie of what judges are doing to stop Trump. And this is a key little nugget you'll want to share with other people, but just watch this clip. It shows clearly it's totally illegal for a judge to try to put reform or put sanctions or anything that affect people outside of his courtroom. His authority does not go beyond the courtroom, the people that are standing before him. So he can't have an injunction that makes all of America do what he wants. That's not his jurisdiction. But watch this.
Mr. Shoemate, what's a universal injunction?
Senator, a universal injunction is what we call an order from a court enjoining the government in a way that goes beyond the parties to the case, but applies nationwide or in some cases universally to enjoin the government.
Is it sometimes referred to as a nationwide injunction?
Yes, it is, Senator.
What's the statutory basis for a federal judge issuing an order that affects people other than the parties before the court?
I'm not aware of a statutory basis, Senator.
There is no statutory basis, is there?
No, Senator.
What's the United States Supreme Court opinion which interprets the Constitution in a way that allows a federal district court judge to do this? Can you name me that case?
I'm not aware of one, Senator.
There isn't one, is there?
I'm not aware of one, Senator.
Now, explain to me how this works. You have a plaintiff and you have a defendant. And the plaintiff files a lawsuit and goes in front of a federal judge. Federal judge has certain jurisdiction in personam and subject matter over the parties, the people, the plaintiff and the defendant. They're the only two people in court. How can a judge, a federal judge, issue an order that affects everybody else other than those in front of him or her? How is that possible?
It shouldn't be possible, Senator, but district courts do it all the time. I think on the theory that the courts need to enjoin a federal policy from going into effect, and they often will enjoin it as nationwide, so all non-parties are protected by that injunction.
I thought that if you wanted to affect parties who aren't in court, you had to file a class action.
That's correct, Senator.
So why don't the federal judges, instead of issuing a universal injunction with no legal basis, tell the plaintiff, look, you got to go file a class action if you want to impact parties who aren't subject to my court?
Senator, the Department of Justice makes that argument all the time in our briefs. I think in many cases, class actions would be inappropriate. They wouldn't. The plaintiffs couldn't satisfy Rule 23 to establish a class.
So they couldn't?
Correct.
So they prefer to ask for a universal injunction?
Yes.
Okay. Does this encourage forum shopping?
Yes, Senator. Not only does it encourage forum shopping, but also district shopping and filing multiple strategic lawsuits to find one judge that will enjoin a single policy nationwide, where if you have five lawsuits, only one of those five cases needs to be successful.
And both sides, all sides, have used this as a way to forum shop, haven't they?
I think plaintiffs, regardless of administrations, will often file cases in the most favorable forum. Yes.
Okay. We've established that there's no basis in statute and no basis in Supreme Court precedent for a universal injunction. How about a common law? I mean, this is universal injunction is basically an equitable remedy. Did this exist in common law courts in England on which our law is based?
I don't believe so, Senator. I think the government has cited cases from the Supreme Court that says, courts are really bound by the scope of relief that a court in equity would have granted back in England before the founding. And the courts at that time would grant relief to the parties in the case, not far beyond the
A universal injunction as a remedy is unknown in English common law, is it not?
I haven't done the research that far back, but I'm not aware of
that. I have.
It's unknown. Wasn't part of equity. Only about 27 universal injunctions were issued in the 20th century. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right, Senator.
But 86 of them were issued against President Trump in his first term. Is that correct?
I don't know the specific number, but they were a high number.
And so far in President Trump's second term, 30 universal injunctions have been issued against him. Have they not?
Senator, I don't have a specific number, but that sounds about right.
The universal injunction has become a weapon against the Trump administration, has it not?
Yes.
And tell me again in my last 10 seconds, tell me the basis of basis for universal injunction in Article 3. I read Article 3, which defines judicial power. Where does it mention universal injunction?
It does not, Senator. It says courts are to decide the case or controversy before them, which is based on the parties to the case.
So the Congress could act and say, look, federal judges, you render a decision to a plaintiff or a defendant, but you can't impact people outside of your courtroom other than through a class action. That's why God created class actions, isn't it?
Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The three branches of government are co-equal, and you only have to have two branches in agreement to move forward with something. If Congress says this is constitutional and they've sworn an oath to the Constitution, and the President says this is constitutional and he's sworn an oath to the Constitution, then they can ask the Supreme Court for their opinion. That's why it's called an opinion. But if they come back and say, we don't agree with you, it doesn't mean you have to obey the Supreme Court even. People need to understand that. That's not the way the founders intended it to be. It was two of the branches could override the third. So it was always the majority, the 66% majority that was doing that, just like in the Senate and everything else. You can change things dramatically if you have a supermajority. But the Supreme Court or the judicial activists, they're not like a more powerful branch that can override Congress and override the president whenever they want. It was never supposed to be that way. I heard Alan Keyes once give an incredible talk on that. It was like, oh my goodness, it's totally been distorted. The court is there to get their opinion of what they think. But again, if Congress and the president are in agreement, no, we do not believe your opinion is correct. They're the ones that have the power then to act anyway, and we the people then have the power in the next election, if we don't agree with what they did, to throw the bums out. That's the way it's supposed to be. Supreme Court is not near as powerful. It's not supposed to be, or the activist judges are not supposed to have a fraction of the power they've been given by the left. The reason the left gave them that power is they knew what they were doing was not constitutional. They knew what they were doing wasn't right. So they said, well, we're just going to get judges to be the arbiters of what is right and what is constitutional. And we'll get them, you know, radicals put in there. So when they say, yes, it's constitutional right of a woman to have an abortion, when it's not, then we'll just go with it for 50 years and kill 65 million babies. That's what's happened. It's not supposed to be that way. But we're living in the middle of that. So it's very interesting times. I encourage you to stay vigilant in prayer. That's what got us to where we are right now, is praying for God to have mercy, praying that we would have discernment and wisdom, praying that he would bless our little efforts and multiply our loaves and fishes as we speak truth and share the truth and the gospel and educate those around us. I also encourage you to be praying for the persecuted Christians all over the world that are suffering every day, today. Hundreds of them were executed today just because they believe in Jesus Christ. Pray specifically for Calvary Chapel, San Jose. That's one of my home churches that I go out there once a year, and they're like family to me. But they were so abused by the state of California during COVID. They've been in a four-year court battle where the government tried to shut them down and told them to their face, you are not essential, and we hope you never open again after COVID. And they would not close their doors because they have to keep the doors open of the church, have to stay open for those in need, especially during a crisis. But Anyway, they're in this battle right now. I have a little video below that talks a little more about it. Watch that, but be praying for them that God will bless their efforts to stand against the tyrants in California, and that they will find favor in the sight of the judges and things, and be able to have just been faithful in worshiping God, regardless of what big government said. And I lastly just pray that the deceptions around us would be clear, where we would have the discernment to see with open eyes what is true and what is not true. Our verse for this week is Galatians 3:24. Wherefore, the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. The Ten Commandments are God's laws. And the reason he gave those to us is not to keep. He wanted us to pursue keeping them, but he knew we could not keep them perfectly. So he wanted it when we looked at those laws, it'd be like a school teacher going, no, you're wrong. You've told lies. You've blasphemed God. You've dishonored your parents. You've committed adultery in your mind. You've all these things. And we would see, oh, we're guilty. We have broken his laws. And so that's the power of the truth of the gospel. Use the law when you're sharing the gospels with others so they see, oh, I'm not as good as I thought I was. I've broken almost all of his commandments. And so I'm guilty before a holy, just God. And I'm going to have to pay that price if I don't accept the free gift that was given to me by Jesus Christ shedding his blood to wash away those sins. But therefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ that we might be justified by faith. Faith is what saves us when it's put in someone that can save, who is Jesus Christ. I appreciate you very much, and I'm thankful for you. And until next week, God bless you.